Tavares looks that out to short left field. That could be trouble. Going out is Witt. He can't get it. It drops down. Both runs will score. Lowe is in. Langford right behind him. A bloop single. Just a butterfly of a hit by Tavares. And the Rangers have a 3-0 lead.
And the Rangers would go on to win 4-0 over the Royals on Sunday, as they finished out a 3-game sweep of Kansas City at Globe Life Park in Arlington. With that victory, it was a very rough 3-game series for the Royals, a rough road trip for the Royals. We'll get more into that coming up here on the Sports Ticket. Also, the Royals are possibly going to be looking to buy here at the trade deadline coming up next month. So we'll talk about that as well with the story that came out there from Royals.com. Also on Sunday, I believe it was. Either way, I saw it, and we'll chat about it and kind of give thoughts about where the Royals are at right now. Again, it has been a tough couple weeks here for the Royals as far as their record is concerned. And again, we'll have more on that coming up here momentarily. Also coming up here on the Sports Ticket, we'll look at the College World Series and Stanley Cup Finals Game 7 coming up here tonight. And we will chat about all that coming up here on the Sports Ticket. But we're going to start first with local sports this weekend on Saturday night at the Kansas Wesleyan's Maybe Arena in Salina. The Kansas Basketball Coaches Association held their annual All-Star Games. As a good time there. Actually was in attendance because I went to pick up my media award there from KBCA, and it was very cool to be there because I ran into one of my old college classmates, and boy, it's tough to believe. I said earlier in the Waterside Wake Up that it's tough to believe that I've been out of school for 23 years of high school, and tough to believe that I've been out of college, community college there for 21 years when I came here. So, but yeah, I got a chance to see my old college classmate and buddy Jason Vinjohn, who's a coach right now at for the Winfield girls basketball team down there in South Central Kansas, and caught up and reminisced about all the times in college and at Colby there. And boy, there were some names that he brought up that I hadn't heard in a very, very long time. It was fun to I think it's always fun to do that and also just to chat with, you know, I chat with a lot of coaches out here about, you know, some of the things that they deal with just throughout a season or throughout summers and how practices go and how difficult it is to keep up with everybody. My buddy Jason there, he's got three kids that he's running around here this summer as well and trying to keep up with, like a lot of parents are dealing with. I saw a post the other day about Kaysha needs to kind of reel in things that are happening over the summer because it feels like summer's busier now than the school year. And, man, I see that with, you know, my sisters now. It'll start coming a little bit more for, well, both of my sisters are older than me, but the younger of the two is starting to see her kids coming up and doing a lot of things over the summer here and all that. And it just it seems like they just crunch everything right in the month of June, and you just don't have time to really go anywhere or do a whole lot of anything if you have kids participating in summer sports or they're getting themselves ready with the summer tournaments. We've seen some of that going on here with basketball as well, as they've opened up some of the things that you can do. And, you know, schools are having, you know, midsummer, like 18 bracket tournaments that have taken place, and these aren't like they come back the next day. They're, you know, maybe a weekend tournament, but, you know, a lot of games in maybe 1 or 2 days that they get in. And so it's kind of tough sometimes. If you go to the MAYB and AAU events and things like that, there's a lot going on. So it was fun to talk to just somebody different from a different part of the state and even in a higher classification than what I would normally talk to about some of these summer things when I was talking to my buddy Jason there. So I got reminiscing about Colby and how things went there and talking about some of the guys that played on the basketball team. He was on the basketball team out there as well when I was in school. So it was a good time there on Saturday night. The games were, well, the girls' game was not good, unfortunately. And I say unfortunately because our area representative was Dakota Kattenberg from Smith Center in that girls' contest, and she was on the gold team, which lost to the blue team 102-60. Dakota did score 7 points and was the tied for the second most points for anybody on the gold team. Abby Kermer of Emporia led all scores with 17 for the blue, And it's also always interesting when you can find connections to the area, and that was also the case for the Blue Team, where Lily Brown from Pittsburgh Colgan, who is Matt Brown's daughter, Matt from St. John's, and was an outstanding athlete with the Blue Jays back in the late 90s, early 2000s, if I recall correctly, or definitely in the 90s, for late 90s, mid to late 90s for sure. And Matt had a daughter, Lily, who Matt, after high school, ended up going to Pittsburgh State and doing track and field, and stayed down there in the Pittsburgh area after getting married and having kids. And his daughter, Lily, played in the All-Star game. I believe Don and Joanne are her grandparents, living in Beloit still. So Lily Brown from Pittsburgh Colgan had a double-double with 13 points and 10 rebounds as part of the Blue squad as well in their victory. Also, in the boys' contest, it was a very fun one to watch. It's always fun. The thing about boys' all-star games, and this has been the case in the KBCA for a while, but I was talking with my buddy Jason. He's like, I think the fact that Coach Kinnaman's here from McPherson might actually be requiring his team at least to try to play defense a little bit, because a lot of these all-star games, much like the NBA all-star game, right, it's just kind of a free-for-all. You go out and you want to get dunks and highlight plays, and there were a few of those, but there was one on a putback that was unbelievably impressive. But you get in there, the kid from Bennington actually had a dunk on a putback that I'm speaking of there for the Blue Team, and you get into the boys' games, and it's like, man, it's up and down, and it is still, even though there may be some defense being played, there's a lot of one-on-one stuff going on there, and it's kind of like, I know it was like I felt when Bryce Beisner played from Beloit and for the Blue Team, and also Will Cravens from Ellsworth for the Gold Team. We'll more on that here in a second. But I felt like when Bryce got the ball, it was like, buddy, you better make a move or get a shot up now if you want to get shots and points in this game, because there's a lot of one-on-one going on, and Bryce did that. He ended up with 10 points for the Blue Team. Unfortunately, his team also lost 100-93 to the Gold Team, because Will Cravens scored a game-high 19 points for the Gold Squad, the Ellsworth product. Talking with Kyle Beisner over there, and he was talking about how these guys have played in a lot of games where they were on the same floor, Bryce Beisner of Beloit, Will Cravens of Ellsworth, and they've never, even with all-star games here this year, they've never got to play on the same team as each other, which would have been kind of cool to be able to see that. And we always talk about the eight-man all-star games in football over the summer, and the fact that, you know, all these guys have been bashing heads against each other for their entire careers, and now they get to be on the same team, right? If you're on the east side, you're on the same team. If you're on the west side with all those guys in your district or in your league, in some cases, you're going to be on the same team. Well, this is not split up east and west. It's just they try to split it up balanced, and the girls' game didn't work. Obviously, the shooters were definitely on the Blue Team in the girls' game. And then, they try to balance it out. So, unfortunately, Will Cravens and Bryce Beisner never got to play on the same team together. But Will had an outstanding game again. He finished with 19 points. It was a game high in the contest, as his Gold Team won 193 over the Blue Team. Cravens actually finished 7 of 10 from the floor and went 3 of 5 from three-point land. Beisner wrapped up his high school career with a 10-point performance and shot 5 of 6 from the floor. Initially, they had given him a three-pointer to put him at 11, but then they called it a 2 later, so he came back down to 10 points. But he did hit double figures in the All-Star game, Bryce finishing out his prep career there. He's going on to KU to just go to school, and I know that I haven't had a chance to talk to him about how the volleyball thing's going. He's trying to be a manager for the volleyball team and get into to that part of it as well, so we wish nothing but the best to Bryce and also to Will Cravens as they go off to college, and definitely Dakota Kattenberg as well. She's headed to Tabor to play basketball from Smith Center coming up next year. So it was nice to see, you know, those three get their final prep games in as they all head off to college and do other things, whether that be sports or just going to school and, you know, having a behind-the-scenes thing going on with sports as well. So best of luck to Bryce, Will, and Dakota here moving on to the next level. KBCA All-Star Games, again, the Blue Girls winning 102-60, the Gold Boys team winning 100-93. Sports Ticket here on KD Country 94 is brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. They're your home team for fast and friendly auto repair. You can find them south of the courthouse in Beloit and at KieverBrothers.com. All right. Well, we'll get to the depressing part of the show now. The Royals are reeling right now, and it has been a struggle offensively. It was a very big struggle offensively in their three-game sweep loss to the Texas Rangers over the weekend. Friday, the Royals did score two runs. They ended up losing 6-2, but their last run came in the fifth inning, and that was the last run they scored in the series. They've gone 22 consecutive innings without scoring a run now. They lost 6-0 on Saturday afternoon, and yesterday afternoon a 4-0 loss to the Rangers. So overall in the series, they're outscored 16-2, and it was tough. They had just three hits yesterday, or two hits actually. They only got three batters on. Max Scherzer made his season debut yesterday as he starts the year at 1-0. He was held with a lower pitch count because he was just making his first start. But it was good. The five innings that he pitched, he struck out four Royals, allowed just one hit, and starts season 1-0. Jose Urena gets a technical. It's a four-inning save, his first save of the season. He pitched the final four innings, gave up one hit, gave up a walk, did have a strikeout. And, the Royals got two hits and a walk yesterday. That was their activity of getting on the base pass. Bobby Witt Jr. has struggled here of late for the Royals offensively, and as we look at I'm going to pull up his game log. He was 0 for 3 yesterday, 0 for 4 on Saturday, and 0 for 4 on Friday. So he is he's really been struggling the last four games. He is 1 of 15 at the plate. No walks. He struck out three times and had an RBI in the win over Oakland back on June 20th, last Thursday. So, this is the guy that's the MVP candidate for the Royals. And obviously, if his bat isn't going, then the Royals are struggling offensively. And that was obviously the case this weekend as Bobby did not get a hit in the entire series. He went 0 for 11 from the plate with two strikeouts. Down there in Texas, back home, where he's from in Arlington, with that sweep, and tough weekend all around for the Royals. They're now 42-37. The Rangers improved to 37-40 with the sweep, and unfortunately for the Royals, for the first time now since April 6th, they are not in a playoff spot. They are out of the playoffs and would be on the outside looking in if the season ended today. They went just 2-7 on the road trip as they did get the one win against the Athletics, and they had a win against the Dodgers as well last weekend. So they've now lost 6 of 7. And they've gone 3-14 in their last let me redo that. 3-11 in their last 14 games. Safe to say they're on a heck of a slide right now, and the Rangers took advantage of it. They get the sweep over the weekend. Matt Quatrero was not in uniform yesterday. He was out taking care of a personal matter, the manager for the Royals. So, they had a bench coach in there yesterday. My apologies for that. And, it was, again, a sweep and a rough weekend. For some reason, I closed the cut that I had on the Royals. And I'm trying to get that pulled back up as I'm talking, doing two things at once. Sometimes that's kind of hard to do. Here we go. Got it finally. Paul Hoover, the Royals bench coach, on the offensive struggles. He was the acting manager yesterday.
Obviously, when you're scuffling a little bit, you want to see anything fall. And when you hit a ball hard, it's right at somebody. But these guys are working really, really hard, and confident at the bunch they're going to be able to get through it.
It's one thing I've liked about this Royals team is they don't give up. They fight to the very end. But again, just two runs, outscored 16-2 this weekend in Texas. So again, that was Paul Hoover, the acting manager yesterday, Royals bench coach. The Royals get set to start now a three-game series with the Marlins at Kauffman Stadium, 7:10 tonight. This is where you got to take care of business. The Marlins are just 27-50, the Royals 42-37, and Kansas City's, they got to go out there and be focused to start this series. They're much better at home than they are on the road. The road woes continuing for the Royals here this season, and so they're trying to get back on the winning track at home as they take on the Marlins tonight, starting a three-game set. Again, 7-10 first pitch. Pitching for the Royals is Cole Reagans. He's 4-5 with a 3.13 ERA against Rodri Munoz of the Marlins, who's 1-2 with a 5.76 ERA. That's a look at what's going on here this weekend with the or tonight as the Royals again open up the three-game set with the Marlins, and they'll have the Guardians coming in for, I believe, four after that. Let me double-check the schedule here and see. I don't want to misspeak with the Royals here. Let me get to the right spot. Yeah, three with the Marlins, and then four with the Guardians, and three more at home with the Rays. So they have a 10-game homestand that will end on July 4th with Tampa Bay. And then they'll go out to Colorado and take on St. Louis and Boston after that on the road. So, again, the Royals coming in with a record of 42-37 to tonight's game. Looking at the MLB standings, the Guardians still in first place at 49-26. Just an outstanding season that they're having. 7.5 games ahead of the Twins, who are now in second ahead of the Royals at 43-35. The Royals have gone 3-7 in their last 10. They're dropping to 42-37, third place in the AL Central, 9 games behind the first place Guardians in this division. The Yankees, 52-28. They have the best record in the American League. They are a game and a half ahead of the Orioles, who are 49-28. Seattle Mariners are 45-35, 6 games ahead of the Astros, 6.5 ahead of the Rangers there in the AL West. NL East, the Phillies actually have the best record percentage-wise in baseball. They don't have the most wins, but they're 51-26 compared to the 52-28 Yankees record. So percentage-wise, 662-650. The Phillies are the best team in baseball right now, again at 51-26. They're 7 games ahead of the 43-32 Braves. In the Central Division, the Brewers are first place, 45-33, 5 games ahead of the Cardinals, who are 39-37. And the Dodgers lead the NL West at 48-31, the only team with a winning record. Padres are right at 500 and 8.5 games behind the Dodgers. San Diego's 41-41. Moving back to the Royals again, I've had some chats with now a couple different people about this, about what the Royals might do coming up at the trade deadline. Excuse me, and for me it was kind of like the first time I had this conversation was probably about a month ago, maybe even more than that. And it's like we got to pump the brakes right now. And I mean, sure, if you're where you're at that point. If you're still there at the All-Star break and then heading back toward the trade deadline a couple weeks later, then, yeah, we're going to definitely think about being buyers here. And depending on what the record is, where you're at in the standings, you might be serious buyers and might say, hey, even though we're ahead of schedule, we've got a window here to go ahead and just go after this. We did not expect to be this good this year, so we're going to go after it. We're going to go down swinging. And, you know, that the thought process like a month ago for me was like not – hey, are you going to get somebody? Are you going to go buy? Are you going to basically at when these things happen, it's a future risk because you have to usually trade away prospects to get the guys that you want. And it's well documented in 2015 that things worked out, right? They traded for Johnny Cueto and Ben Zobrist and traded a ton of pitching prospects away to get those two guys and make that move. Wade and I talked about this too. I think it was last week at some point. The biggest difference in this year's Royals team compared to that 2015 team was the 2015 team was already the best team in the American League. They were on a course to get back to the World Series after going in 2014 and being that team that was ahead of schedule probably in 2014 of making the World Series, you know, coming back from the cusp of elimination there in the wild card game against the A's and getting the win in extra innings and Salvi being the hero there and Christian Colon as well. And getting that one in 2014 and then rolling through with some extra inning games. The first three games of that postseason were extra innings. And they got the sweep in five of the divisional series against the Angels, and they swept the Orioles and the ALCS. And all of a sudden, they're 8-0 going into the World Series. And you're like, whoa, we didn't expect this to happen. And you're in the World Series and enjoying every little bit of it and every minute of it. And you get to Game 7 and then have the heartbreak with the Giants, and you lose. And Madison Bumgarner and that whole story. And so you come back and they were focused. They were ready to go in 2015, and they were number one team in the American League when they made the trade for Cueto and Zobrist and traded away prospects. You're in a very, very different situation now, and as you keep continuing to go down in this situation, when now you're 3-11 in your last 14 games, 3-7 in your last 10, whatever that may be, and you were just swept and scored two runs. You got a 22-inning scoreless streak right now. Things kind of change in your mind about where maybe this team should go. So that's why about a month ago I was like, got to wait and see where you're at. Once you get closer to that All-Star break for sure, and then once you get closer to the trade deadline, and then that approaches and comes upon you. So I've had some different people ask me, and you know what I've said is I could see like a similar type trade that you said. I'm not saying position-wise, and I think I've said this on the show before, but you're thinking like back when Justin Maxwell was traded to the Royals, and this was back in 2013 when the Royals were, I believe, finished 86-76 that year, didn't make the playoffs. Yeah, they were 86-76. They were fighting and trying to get into the postseason, but they didn't make it that year because there was only the two wild cards instead of what they have now with the expanded playoff field. So, you know, that one wild card game to try to get in, which is what they won in 2014, right? So, Justin Maxwell is an outfielder that they brought in. They wanted somebody that might have just a little bit of pop in the bat that could come in and, excuse me, get a spot starter or pinch hit somewhere here, somewhere there, and have success. And you know, I kind of likened what I thought may happen to something like that, to where you're going to go find somebody that could step in a spot, and right now I'd say they definitely need relief pitching, more consistent relief pitching, and I would like to have an outfielder that could hit, to be completely honest with you. They don't have any of those that are consistent at hitting at all, which is so weird to see a team with this many wins. Usually there's like outfielders that have pop in their bat when you're winning these games. It's just like it does. That's not how it has to be, but that's kind of conventionally. You got at least one outfielder that's hitting bombs or that's hitting very, very well, right? And so it's kind of interesting to see this team and the success that they've had without having an outfielder that can really hit consistently or even hit with power. With Kyle Isbell, and you know, they've had Adam Frazier out there, and obviously MJ Melendez is playing out in left field, and it's been a struggle for him at the plate this year for the Royals, and they're trying to figure some things out. So, you know, that would be where I would look, is maybe we can get some kind of outfielder that might be able to come in here and give you some pop at the plate or something of that. Nelson Velasquez is basically a DH and thought that he'd have some pop, and it's just not been the same as it was last year when he was acquired. So the Royals are, again, looking at the trade deadline coming up, and the question is out there, are they buyers or are they sellers, or do they stay pat? And so this is from Brian Murphy, who this was posted at Royals.com. The Royals entered Sunday holding the third wild card spot. Again, they're out of that wild card spot now after the loss. General Manager J.J. Pecola said Sunday on MLB Network Radio that his club plans to be aggressive at the deadline. Just how aggressive, however, remains to be seen. Pecola said, "The thing we have to keep in mind is I like to think that we're just getting into a window where we're going to have a nice handful of seasons. How far do we want to push this thing is something that we have to answer as a front office." And it's exactly what I was just talking about. He said, "I will say that I feel an obligation personally to the guys that committed to this team and chose Kansas City, and to Salvador Perez's Bobby Witts, who have chosen to be here long term, to add to this club. So we will be aggressive, and we'll look at anything and everything." And again, as far as what the Royals would look to upgrade, the outfield, again, seems to be a clear area of need. Headed into Sunday, they were, I don't know, weighted runs created plus. Where do you get these numbers? Anyway, the Royals were worst in the majors in weighted runs continued plus, whatever the hell that means. I don't know what it all means. Anyway, the outfielders are not good, and there were some outfielders that were highlighted in a recent story. Among those outfielders could be Oakland's Brent Rooker, who, crazily enough, was part of the Royal system at one point. Tommy Pham of the White Sox, Angels trio of Taylor Ward, Joe Adell, and Kevin Pillar. So those are some of the names that are out there. Luis Robert, or Robert, I don't know how to say his name, from the White Sox, could be a target as well. And so, yeah, outfield is definitely something that the Royals are looking at. And then, again, on the mound, the relievers for the Royals entering Sunday had tied for 21st in ERA at 4.43, 25th in opponent OPS at 7.33. Piccolo admitted that lightening the lineup and bolstering the bullpen, or lengthening the lineup and bolstering the bullpen, would be among the club's priorities. He said, if we can do that and be in a better spot going into the second half of the year, I'll be happy to do it. So not a whole lot there. That's the story. There wasn't a whole lot more than what I said, right? Because you do. You feel like there's a window here of opportunity, and if you go in hard and go in strong and try to get some, even like a closer that would cost you a little bit more money than you would want to spend, or an outfielder that, you know, is just going to be like a rental player. You don't want to do those kind of things if you're a team that's on the rise. And because I say that, because you're undoubtedly going to have to trade away some prospects that could be very, very key to what you want to do moving forward after this season. And then keep your you want to keep a good group together, because Bobby Witt Jr. is here through at least 2031. He's an 11-year deal is what he signed in the offseason, 7 for sure and guaranteed. And so you're here through 2031 with Bobby Witt Jr., and you want to make sure that you get all these things corrected if you can, as you continue to move and build this team into what you would hope would maybe, instead of just be like a flash in the pan couple years thing, maybe you can build this team into some kind of playoff contender on an annual thing. You know, the Twins never won anything, but man, they were so annually a playoff contender in the AL Central. You know, small market, they never, I don't know if they made the AL Championship Series, to be completely honest with you. I gotta check that. But you know, they were a team that was consistently winning the American League Central. And it's a situation here where you want to make sure that you're building this team to where you have the chance to make it last, is what I'm trying to say. To make it where Bobby Witt Jr.'s 7-year, possibly 11-year contract isn't just, hey, this is a window, this is the year that we're going to win. You know, it felt like that. And I know small market probably always feels like that, that you don't have the longevity of it, but you got to figure out, hey, when can we do it? When can the 1 year be ours? And for the Royals, that 1 year, well, it was 2 years. They made it to the World Series in 2014, had the heartbreak, come back and win it 2015. So that was your window. That was your 1 year. And then things obviously started tailspinning. Wade and I both think the moment they signed Alex Gordon instead of Ben Zobrist to a long-term deal, things started going back on the backside of that the other way. They're 500 the next year. And then, you know, the losing seasons start coming again. And last year you lose 106 games. So, yeah, it's just kind of been that way for the Royals, and I know that it's easy for me to sit here and say build a team that can consistently be a playoff contender instead of just trying to build for a window, but that's just kind of the way it is. That's what teams are doing, but you have seen teams, you know, like the Twins and even the Rays, right? Like they seem to be at one point just a perennial contender for the playoffs and for the AL East, and you didn't see the Rays like have a really, really good season, make the World Series, and then just bomb and drop off. You did see that with the Marlins, but the Marlins also sold the farm after both World Series that they won. So a little bit different when you're doing that instead of actually trying to keep a team together and actually build something that stays, right? The Twins did make the I'm looking all this up. They had a run from 2002 to 2010 where they made it to the playoffs 6 times. They did make the AL Championship Series, losing to the Angels in 2002 in 5 games. And then after that, it was nothing for the Twins. They did not make it back to the championship They lost wild card games in 2017 and 2020, and they did make the ALDS, but lost 3-1 last year to the Astros in the playoffs. So the Twins never, they made it once to the AL Championship Series during that run. They did win a World Series back in 1991, and obviously won the World Series in 1987 as well. So they've been to AL Championship Series before, but ever since they kind of started that run in 2002, where they made it to the playoffs again six times from 2002 to 2010, they only made it to the ALCS once. But they were perennial contenders from the Central, and they were a very, very good team that they won the AL Central all those years that they made it. If I recall correct, yeah, there was no wild cards from 2002 to 2010. So they were the AL Central champions those 6 years as well. And that's kind of what I'm talking about. It's not going to be every single year that you're going to win the division, but you're in contention almost every year. And that's a small market team that had to figure out how to put it together and build it from the ground up. And that's what the Royals are doing right now. So you'd like to see that happen. Get together a team that can win consistently. And if you go too hard here at the deadline and trade away prospects that you might need, especially with a team now that's lost three of their last, or that's 3-11 in their last 14, I don't think this is the year the team, as we're looking at it right now. Again, this could change again in July, so you still have to wait and see where the team's at, mid to late July, to see what they should probably do at the deadline. But if they're where they're at right now, you don't sell the farm. You maybe get a guy that you think maybe can get that wild card berth for you and put you back there and get you into the playoffs. But this team right now, as it's constructed, and even with a couple guys that you could bring in, I don't know if it's a World Series contender. So I just don't think that you waste the prospects that you might have to give up in a trade to get better here at the deadline. But J.J. Piccolo says the team will be aggressive, so we'll wait and see just how aggressive they'll be. We're on the Sports Ticket, presented by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. We're going to take a quick time out. When we come back, we'll talk about the College World Series and the Stanley Cup Finals. Two champions are going to be crowned tonight in sports.
I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Hot weather is here. Is the air conditioning in your vehicle nice and cold? If not, we can help. We have the training and equipment to service vehicle AC systems of all types, including the new refrigerant and late model vehicles. We offer same-day service on air conditioning with no appointment necessary. So don't sweat it out. Give us a shout. Fast, friendly service for your air conditioner can be found at Kiever Brothers Automotive, just south of the courthouse in Beloit, or on the web at KieferBrothers.com.
That ball is hammered, and that may end the zero. It is gone! Dylan Dreiling edged at stage right, 22nd of the year, and the balls finally break through to lead it 2-1.
Dylan Dreiling, Hayes, Kansas native, 2022 grad of Hayes High School, and helping out the number one team in the country on Sunday afternoon, the Tennessee Volunteers, as that two-run homer gave Tennessee a 2-1 lead in the seventh inning. They would add another two-run homer from Cal Stark in the eighth to go on to a 4-1 victory in the College World Series Championship Finals against third seed and number three Texas A&M there in Omaha Sunday afternoon. Texas A&M won game one on Friday night, 9-5, Saturday night, 9-5, I should say. And then yesterday, Tennessee won 4-1. So that sets up a championship game, basically. It's the championship finals. But this is a winner-take-all game three in Omaha, and it's tonight at 6 o'clock on ESPN. So you'll have at least one champion crowned. It'll be a team that has never won a championship. Texas A&M nor Tennessee have ever won the College World Series championship. So we'll have a first-time champion coming up here tonight in college baseball. It's been an interesting tournament and College World Series to watch. And the World Series, as far as the bracket one, bracket two part of it, it went the shortest amount of time it could. Everything got done without having to play a third or a second game, I guess, in a championship or a semifinal bracket part of it to get into the championship finals. So there was a bit of a break there. I believe Thursday and Friday were off, and then they started this championship final series here this weekend. So, again, Tennessee and Texas A&M, 6 o'clock tonight. It's always fun to see Kansas kids shining at the highest level and the brightest stage, and when the lights are on them. Technically, I guess sunlight was on them yesterday. It wasn't the lights. But tonight it will be, at some point, probably the lights on them. Doesn't get dark for a bit here in June, obviously, at this time of the year after we just hit summer last Thursday. So, but again, a chance for a new champion, and a new champion will be crowned tonight in college baseball. There will also be another champion crowned tonight in hockey.
They haven't stopped believing, and this series gets dragged back to South Florida for a winner-take-all Stanley Cup Final Game 7.
Yeah, that's how it goes. Florida Panthers were up 3-0 on the Edmonton Oilers going into Game 4 last Saturday, June 15th. And the Oilers bombed the Panthers in Game 5, or Game 4, excuse me, 8-1. Then they won the fifth game. They go back and win 5-1 on Friday at home in Edmonton. And they have come all the way back to tie this thing at 3 apiece, and now we get one of the most exciting things in sports, which is Game 7. And in hockey, Game 7 it feels different than a lot of sports, just because I think it's just because of the packed energy inside a stadium, and you're just on it. You know, you're right on the – obviously, you have the glass separating the fans from the ice, but everybody's just right on top of it, right? And everybody's enjoying it. And it's – a chance here for the Edmonton Oilers to do something huge. We talked about this the other day. There have only been 4 3-0 comebacks, and only one happened in the Stanley Cup Finals. It was not in the modern era. It was in 1942 when the Toronto Maple Leafs came back from down 3-0 to defeat the Detroit Red Wings in the Stanley Cup Finals. The only other times this has happened were in just regular playoff Stanley Cup quarters. The Islanders beat the Penguins coming back from 3-0 deficit in 1975 against Stanley Cup quarters. Eastern Conference semis in 2010. The Bruins were up 3-0 on the Flyers. Philadelphia came all the way back to win. And then the first round of the Western Conference playoffs in 2014, the Sharks had a 3-0 lead, and the Kings from L.A. came back to win in that first round series in the best of seven. Again, the 1942 Maple Leafs, the first team to overcome a 3-0 deficit. And they remain the only team to do so in the Stanley Cup Finals. But the Edmonton Oilers are trying to do it tonight as they take on the Florida Panthers. Wade gave me some flack the other day about I wanted Edmonton to win to force the Game 7. I'm a guy that likes to see history. And so just to say I was alive and saw it happen, right? There was, you know, like when the Patriots were looking to go undefeated, deep down in my gut, I've never liked the Patriots, and I've disliked that franchise for a while. To be completely honest with you, when Tom Brady won his first Super Bowl in 2002, which would have been the 2001 season, I didn't like the way the whole thing went down. I didn't think Drew Bledsoe should have lost his job just because he got injured. In retrospect, obviously, I look like an idiot for thinking that way, but I wasn't the only one, I promise you. There was a lot of discourse and talk about that back then, that, hey, I don't think it's right that this guy comes in. Because Tom Brady wasn't, like, off the charts. He was, like, his first few years, it's well documented that, yeah, he won. They won Super Bowls 3 out of 4 years, but a lot of times his defense put him in those situations to win. Obviously, you got to make the plays, but 2 of the Super Bowls they won were off the leg of Adam Vinatieri. And so, you know, early on in his career, the numbers weren't adding up to him being as successful as he ended up being. And obviously now, I think widely regarded, and I can't even hide it anymore in my mind, that he's the greatest quarterback of all time, personally. That's a discussion that you can have. Anybody can say what they want. It's all opinion-based. For my money, though, it's Tom Brady. So I don't like the Patriots. I've disliked the Patriots for a while, but part of me did want to see the Patriots finish off the undefeated season. I'm not a Giants fan either, so I didn't care who won that game. It's like I don't need the Giants to win this Super Bowl because I'm a fan of them. So I was not a fan of either one of those teams. So it was like, okay, well, let me see history then. When Kentucky was undefeated and had the chance to finish off that undefeated season. And, you know, they were trying to go 40-0, right? They were 38-0 going into the Final Four, and then lost to Wisconsin and finished 38-1, right? Part of me, even though I don't like John Calipari, never really have, I've never been a fan of Kentucky basketball, but it was just in my mind. It's like, dude, we haven't seen this since the 70s in both the NFL and in NCAA Division I men's basketball. And so I'm like, yeah, I want to see it. I want to see history. If I have no rooting interest and I can stomach this team winning something, it's cool to see history no matter who it is in my eyes sometimes in sports. Now, if it's the Raiders or the Broncos, I don't want to see history. Like, go ahead and beat them. I don't need to hear it from Raiders and Broncos fans. If it's, Duke, I probably don't want to see history. Kentucky probably should be on that list too, right? But it's just those things that you see that you kind of want to see it done. Now, I'm in a different spot right now with this because Wade decided to bring up on Friday that, hey, I'm un-American if I'm cheering for the Edmonton Oilers to beat the Florida Panthers. But my comeback is the Panthers don't even have fans at their games. Why should I be cheering for them? But it is what it is, right? So in my mind, I wanted to see history. I wanted to see the Oilers win on Friday night. They got the job done. Tonight, really don't care. I'm not going to be like, I want this team to win or that team to win. I'm not into hockey enough to make this a thing about nationality, about being a patriot because I'm not cheering for the Panthers, or not being a patriot because I'm not cheering for the Panthers, or being a patriot and saying I want the Oilers to lose tonight. It doesn't matter a bit to me. But if you can see the first team ever in the modern era of the Stanley Cup Finals, and the first team in the Stanley Cup Finals to come back from a 3-0 deficit to win a championship, first time since 1942. I was not alive in 1942. I don't know a lot of people that were alive in 1942, to be completely honest with you. Maybe I do, if you're born in 1942 and you're still alive. But, if you're in the heart of your life in 1942 during World War II, right? I don't know a lot of those people. I do have a great uncle that's a World War II vet, about to turn 100 here in August, and we're going to have a party for him. But, again, that I can't say that I want the Oilers to win tonight, but I will enjoy seeing history be made if they do win tonight. We'll just put it that way, right? Always a fan of watching history and kind of being there for it. It's not always the team that you might want to do it and to pull it off, but I do enjoy watching history be made, whether it's a team that I support or like or not. So Game 7 is tonight in Florida. They're back in Sunrise, as it'll be a winner-take-all, obviously. It's Game 7, and the champion will be crowned in that deciding seventh game in Sunrise, Florida. The puck drops at 7 o'clock on ABC. So that's a look at where we're at right now in the sports world. And the Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals coming up here tonight. All right, we've talked about, there's one, I always check to make sure there's not any new news, and there actually is some new news that has just broke here this morning during the show. There's another thing that came out. New York Mets closer Edwin Diaz facing a 10-game suspension after he's ejected from Sunday night's 5-2 win over the Chicago Cubs for having an illegal substance on his pitching hand. He was thrown out by crew chief Vic Carapazza before he took the mound in the bottom of the ninth inning. And Carapazza said in a pool report after the game, "I touched his hand, grabbed his hand. The substance was extremely sticky, discolored. It definitely wasn't rosin or sweat. We've checked thousands of these. I know what the feeling is. This was very sticky." Diaz claimed he only uses rosin, sweat, and dirt on his hands. "I use the same thing always. I rub rosin, sweat, and I put my hand in the dirt a little bit so I can have some grip on the ball. I was really surprised when I didn't have anything on my hand, glove, or belt. They always check everything." He said he's surprised because he didn't have anything on his hand, and an umpire says there is something on your hand. Carapazza confirmed there was no sticky substances on Diaz other than on his hand. But that's enough to get a player ejected. In recent years, Major League Baseball cracked down on pitchers using foreign substances other than rosin because they allow for better grips and more spin on the ball. Carapazza added that the Mets really didn't argue the ejection or explain what happened. I told them I have a job to do. We're supposed to check it, and that was too sticky. I can't ignore the substance that was on there. Diaz now facing an automatic 10-game suspension for the use of an illegal substance. He can appeal, but said he isn't sure if he will. Diaz said, it's tough to let my teammates down for 10 games. That sucks. Mets manager Carlos Mendoza lamented the loss of Diaz. By rule, the Mets have to play short a man for the length of the suspension. And Mendoza said, we have to move on. Guys are going to have to step up. It's interesting that you would say, no, there's nothing. I mean, I was just like, if you got caught, you got caught, right? Like, just move on with life because you messed up and you're guilty. And I don't think an umpire is going to go into the pool with the reporters and lie about a sticky substance being on Diaz's hand. You're just not going to do it. It's not going to happen. So let's just move on. Take your 10 games, come back, don't put the sticky stuff back on your hand, and you'll be good to go. Again, you are down 10 games. You'll be down a guy on your active roster, but hey, you cheat, that's what you deserve. You don't deserve to have a guy called up because somebody on your team cheated, and now you pay the consequences for it. And that's where we're at with Edwin Diaz facing a 10-game suspension after the illegal substance was found on his pitching hand last night. That is not the breaking news. That's just a story that came out and I wanted to talk about from last night. The breaking news is the Cleveland Cavaliers have filled their open coaching position, according to sources, as Kenny Atkinson will be the next head coach of the Cavaliers. Atkinson is has been an assistant for the Golden State Warriors with Steve Kerr, and the sides have started working on a contract. The deal is expected to be reached soon. The Cavaliers process pared down to Atkinson and New Orleans associate head coach James Borrego. And Borrego, who worked the past season with the new Detroit president Trajan Langdon in New Orleans, is now expected to become a prominent candidate for the Pistons coaching search as well, with Atkinson looking like he'll be the guy with the Cavaliers. Work with Donovan Mitchell. Good luck. That's all I can say. Got the old coach Bickerstaff fired, basically, because they didn't get along, despite the fact that he'd taken the Cavaliers somewhere they hadn't been since prior to LeBron James joining the team when he was drafted in 2003, which was the Eastern Conference semifinals. Not good enough. And now you have Warriors assistant Kenny Atkinson. Don't know a lot about Kenny Atkinson, other than the fact that he's an assistant coach. Does appear he has spent 9 seasons as an NBA assistant, 4 with the Knicks, 3 with the Hawks, before returning to the assistant coaching ranks with the Clippers and Warriors. So, a little bit of a history of Kenny Atkinson, the new head coach for the Cleveland Cavaliers. So, another one filled. Detroit Pistons, you're on the clock to try to fill your head coaching vacancy. There's NBA stuff going on this week. The draft is Wednesday and Thursday. We'll preview that coming up later this week on the Sports Ticket here on KD Country 94. That'll wrap it up for today. Again, a big thanks to Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit bringing the Sports Ticket on KD Country 94. Have a great day, everybody. We'll talk to you again tomorrow on Waterside Wake Up.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.